Hey, our Patriots. I'm Doug. This is Ben. We're going to be talking to Mark Daniels of Providence Journal. We're also going to be looking ahead to our upcoming game against the Saints in New Orleans. But first, unfortunately, we have to look back at last week's game against the Chiefs. On opening night, the Chiefs defeated the Patriots by 15 points in a bit of a stunner after we raised banner number 5 and Mark Wahlberg gave a nice long speech before the game. So, season over, right?
Yeah, if you ask pretty much anybody that is on the subreddit at all, apparently the season's over. Don't think about the fact that the last 3 times we lost our season opener, we've gone on to win it all. And like I've been saying all week, I'd rather lose in September than lose in January. So,
yeah, I'm not happy about it, but I don't quite agree with the hyper-negative reactions we've seen in the media and from some people on the internet. It wasn't good, though. Brady completed just 16 of 36 passes for 276 passing yards, no touchdowns, and a 70 passer rating. That's his lowest completion percentage, less than 50%. His lowest in over 10 years. I think it was 2006 against Miami was the last time his completion percentage was that low. So not a great stat line for Brady, but I would argue that his performance actually was a little bit better than his completion percentage or his passer rating. The Chiefs went into this apparently with a game plan to take away the short pass. He had way more deep passes than he usually does, and that's going to lower your completion percentage, any quarterback's completion percentage, and it's going to increase your yards per attempt. And his yards per attempt was 7.4, which actually isn't that bad. That's right around league average. So I don't think Brady had his best game, but I also don't think it was quite as bad as some people think. You take what I just said into account and also the fact that we didn't pass at the goal line and right there, you know, his pass rating could easily have been 80 or 90.
I don't know. I mean, I've said it and I haven't backed down from it. I didn't think he looked good. Now, I mean, he was overthrowing a lot of receivers in that middle 15 to 20 plus range. It was a tale of two teams because the way they, you know, the first like 7 minutes or so went, you're thinking to yourself, wow, this team's even better than advertised. I mean, they went right down the field, scored right away. Okay, forced a turnover first play. Really should have been up 14 to nothing. That's a tough overturn on that would-be Rob Gronkowski touchdown. It does look like his hand's under the ball, but I can understand why it would be overturned. I think the big stories for me is let's just not do this 1 week overreaction again. I mean, we did this 2 years ago with Kansas City, okay, and everything turned out to be fine. Now, if this is something that evolves, you know, for Tom Brady over the next month or so, then it's time to start worrying if he's consistently, you know, below 50% passing, can't convert on third downs, those sort of things. You know, if the defense is giving up 40 points a game and constant busted coverages and can't stop the run, you know, if that forcing Brady to throw deep, you know, that sort of a game plan is adopted by other teams, and it will be, if that causes problems, you know, those are the sort of things you have to watch looking forward. Beyond just week one, because week one is, you can't judge a season by that. And I've been saying that all along. It's not time to panic or shut it down or become sellers or whatever you want to call it.
One sign of how effectively the Chiefs forced Brady to pass it deep and then succeeded at stopping him from passing it deep either is the fact that Cooks and Gronkowski caught just 5 of 13 targets combined. But I don't think it's a strategy that is going to be very easy for other teams to replicate as the season goes on. Kansas City has an elite defense. We said it had an elite defense and warned you all that it had an elite defense on the last episode. And this is an offense that is still adjusting to the loss of Julian Edelman and that is going to need to find its identity and figure out what kind of offense is going to be this season in Julian's absence, which I think it's still doing and which I'm willing to give it more time to do. And then you not only factor that in, but the fact that Malcolm Mitchell was apparently a game time decision and was put on injured reserve that day. And then Amendola, who was one of the bright spots on the offense and caught 6 of 7 targets for 100 yards, left halfway through the game and was put into the concussion protocol. So hopefully he's okay, but if he is, and if we get Mitchell back, and if we make the adjustments that we're going to need to make without Edelman, I think our offense is going to look a lot better moving forward, and I'm not super worried about it.
Yeah, and I'll admit, I did say I was more worried about the Chiefs' offense than their defense the last episode. Not to say the Chiefs' defense is bad. I mean, it's always good, but I mean, the Patriots still put up 27 points. I mean, Tom Brady still threw for 300 yards. Most of those yards came before the fourth quarter. You know, it wasn't garbage time passing because they didn't move the ball at all in the fourth quarter. They were running pretty well. Rex Burkhead, James White, Mike Gillisley towards the goal line. So the offense was clicking. You know, 27 points most weeks is probably going to win you a football game in the NFL. You know, it just so happens that the defense was awful. Now, I mean, as far as the wide receiver injury situation goes, you know, we knew about Edelman. The Malcolm Mitchell IR news like came across like 2 hours before kickoff. It was really shocking to me. I wasn't expecting that at all. I was expecting Malcolm to have a big, big year. Amendola looked great. Then he gets injured. There's a couple passes that kind of set him up to get hung out to dry. And that's why we're talking all summer about who's going to be that second, that third tight end. Okay. It's why people wanted, you know, Dorsett to do something. It's why people wanted Austin Carr to make the roster or Devin Lucien, because you saw what happened when we were without, you know, three of our top receivers. The offense is limited. You know, it's down to Cooks, Hogan, and Gronkowski, and that was about it. And, you know, if you double-team Gronkowski, that really limits your options, especially if you're having a guy like Marcus Peters, who's a top-10 corner in the league on Brandon Cooks. Okay, it slowly, you know, whittles away at what you can do, especially in crunch time when you need to start passing the ball.
And Brady wasn't great. He had some overthrows, like you mentioned, and he seemed to have trouble adjusting to the loss of Edelman and Mitchell and however that affected the play calling. But I will say this, he didn't look like a quarterback who's aging. You see an aging quarterback, you think he's afraid to take a hit. You know, he goes down too quickly. He can't get any mustard on his passes. His passes are weak and slow. And you don't see overthrowing, and you don't see these mental mistakes that he was making. Yeah. So it seems more like it's a schematic issue more than anything else. And we just need to adjust. I don't think this is a sign of aging.
And if anything, this proves once and for all what I've been saying for years, which is it is not true what everyone wants to say, which is the way to beat Tom Brady is to hit him. Okay. The way to beat him is to drop eight into coverage. It always has been. That's what the Chiefs did all night. They didn't bring anybody. Okay, he stayed clean most of the night until the end of the game. It's when there's, you know, zone coverage everywhere and, you know, you can't really carve it up because, you know, I mean, nobody's open. That's when he struggles. When you want to bring six or seven, okay, he'll find the open man. He's great at that. And once again, we saw that. I've been adamant about that. I don't know how you feel.
I mean, pressure is a good way to slow down Brady, but not blitzing. If you blitz him, he's going to find the guy who's open.
Yeah.
Really quickly, because he can get the ball out super quickly, and that's what makes him better than Rodgers.
He recognizes who's going to be open as a result of that blitz.
Right.
That's what good quarterbacks do.
Now, pressure can be part of shutting down Brady. I mean, it certainly helped the Giants out. It certainly helped the Ravens out. But what really hurts Brady is when you can get pressure while rushing four. However, that is also how you beat any great quarterback. Because if you can generate lots of pressure without having to blitz, then you're going to have good pressure and good coverage. So it's almost so obvious when you break down what that actually means that it's not even worth saying. That's not Brady's, you know, special kryptonite. That's just how you beat good quarterbacks, is to somehow generate a good pass rush while still having good coverage as well and not having to pick one or the other.
It's why the Broncos are always so competitive, and especially in Denver. It's because they do have that good pass rush. I mean, it's not as good as it used to be, but, you know, DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, they had Terrence Knighton. No, did they have Terrence Knighton for a while?
They did.
Okay, and then on the back end, you had T.J. Ward and Chris Harris and Aqib Talib. Okay, that's why they were so competitive, is that they could both generate a rush and have good coverage. Okay, there's no quarterback in the league that can really do anything about that.
If we're going to blame part of the offense other than the injuries on our performance Thursday night, it would be the play calling, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Both first, that we didn't do as good a job as we could have adjusting to the loss of Edelman and Mitchell, and then the loss of Amendola. But even beyond that, in general, I don't think the play calling was very smart. I didn't like those cute underrounds we kept doing with Hogan. It seemed like it worked once, and then we kept going back to it, and it didn't work again all night. And I didn't like the end arounds we did last year either. I remember a few failed ones with Edelman in the Buffalo game that we lost. And we went for it on fourth down twice, which I'm okay with in theory, but we weren't able to get the sneak off. So we just did a halfback dive. It didn't work the first time because, you know, you could tell it wasn't going to work as soon as Brady handed the ball off, actually, because of the way how stacked the Chiefs' D-line was. We fell short. We gave up the 3 points. The Chiefs come down and score. And then in the second half, we did the exact same thing with the Chiefs coming out in what looked to my, you know, non-professional eyes as a very similar formation. So you know, either take the points there or do something a little bit smarter if you can't get the quarterback to sneak off in time. I did not like the way they used Gillislee in those situations.
The only play calling I really had an issue to do with was the fourth down. I don't mind all the end-around stuff. For years, that's what this offense has kind of been based around. It's a staple of Josh McDaniels' offense and really the Patriots as a whole. I mean, they ran all that end-around stuff when Aaron Hernandez was still on the team, where you can, you know, either hand it off to him or then you can work play action off of that. You know, they do it with Julian Edelman. It might be a work in progress with Chris Hogan. You know, he's only had a couple of weeks to work on it. But I don't hate it. I mean, normally they do a good job of running it and then running, you know, a play action pass off of it. So I don't hate that. And I know a lot of fans think it's cute or whatever. But I would hate to see that go because I think it is very versatile. The fourth down stuff, I don't get why there's no quarterback sneak on that first fourth down. You know, Tom Brady, they said it in the broadcast, is over 90% historically on quarterback sneaks, third and fourth one.
Well, they did a measurement. So
what do you mean?
The refs did a measurement, yeah, which slowed everything down.
Oh, so you're saying they couldn't rush to the line.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have taken the Chiefs by surprise.
But, I mean, it doesn't take anybody by surprise either way, and they've done it off of a measurement before. I mean, there's the one thing about quarterback sneaks is that they should never fail. I mean, if you have, you know what you're going on with the snap count, okay, all that really matters is that center can pick one side or the other, okay, and literally just drive his head forward and, you know, as a quarterback, need to run behind him. It's not that hard to convert on quarterback sneaks, and the Patriots historically have proven it, so I didn't really enjoy, you know, the leads or the dives. After it didn't work the first time, and they tried it three times, I would have liked to see, a fake fullback dive tossed to the outside because it looked open, or, you know, a fake lead and then, you know, hit Dwayne Allen or Rob Gronkowski over the top with a little pass, because they had 11 in the box. You can't, I mean, with 11 in the box, it just doesn't work.
I mean, I don't know if they should have used a quarterback sneak, but it's not like a halfback dive is any less predictable in that situation.
I don't know why they wouldn't run it. I mean, it's almost never not worked for them. And I don't believe that Tom Brady is going to get hurt doing it. I don't. Okay. He takes way worse hits than what you get in the quarterback sneak just from being blindsided by Von Miller. We saw it, you know, 2 years ago in the AFC Championship game nonstop.
I'm not fully convinced that would have been the best play to run and that they were wrong not to, but I think it would have been better than what they did run.
Yeah.
Because a halfback dive is no less predictable, and the Chiefs were clearly planning for a run up the middle. So an outside run or a slant or something would have been a better call.
Just a play action, you know, I've always heard it referred to as like a pop pass, but just something where the tight end releases, okay, gets behind, you know, the linebackers, and you can just kind of dump it over the line of scrimmage to him, something like that. And that could have gone for a good 20 yards, okay? And when they were down by the goal line, they went for it after that fumble at the start of the game. I mean, you know, that would have been enough to score. A lot of it didn't make sense, and not audibling out of it didn't make sense either. So that was my problem, kind of with the play calling for the night.
But in general, the Patriots coaching staff, especially McDaniels, seems to be reactive. It seems like they need to see some real games to really get going. With the exception of some seasons like 2007 and 2015, we often start slow relative to late in the season. So if we look at all the causes we just identified, I mean, that's pretty encouraging. I'd rather have these schematic issues, these play calling issues, stuff like that against an elite defense than for us to have just come out week one and all of a sudden Brady's throwing ducks and, you know, the season's over after the first quarter. That's not what happened. I'm optimistic. I think we'll get better, as disappointed as I am in our performance on Thursday. And one silver lining was Gillislee. The halfback dives didn't work, but hard to complain when he had a 3-touchdown night and we needed someone to replace Blunt as our goal line back. And definitely looks like we've found the man.
I don't know what his yardage looked like either, because he had a few good runs from scrimmage, you know, just in the middle of the field, you know, 8, 9, 10, even 11 sometimes yard runs. So I thought he had a pretty good night overall. Obviously, you're never going to complain about 3 touchdowns at the goal line. It takes, you know, a very powerful back to be able to do that. So that's a definite offensive bright spot from the night, is that the running game seemed to be pretty effective, and you found a guy that can replace LeGarrette Blount on the goal line.
He had 45 yards on 15 carries, which is only 3 yards per carry. But when you consider how many of those were from the goal line and the fact that he succeeded at the goal line runs, that's a much better performance than that stat line, especially when running it that often makes it easier for the defense to stop it because they're going to be playing for the run. Let's look at the other side of the ball. I'm going to say that I I think we owe Alex Smith and the Chiefs offense an apology, or at least I do. Not the Chiefs as a team, and not Andy Reid, because I said going into this game that this is a team with a great defense, with a great special teams, that was the second seed last year, and we shouldn't be surprised if it's close. So even though I predicted the Patriots to win, I don't think you and I were being cocky going into this game. However, we did tease Alex Smith quite a bit. We did make fun of his inability or his unwillingness to pass it deep, and he threw 42 points on us, which is the most ever given up by Belichick's Patriots. He threw for 368 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a 148.6 passer rating. He also had 2 touchdown passes of 75 or more yards, which I don't think we've ever allowed, or if we have, it's been more than 10 years. So, Alex Smith, I'm very sorry. You are not a game manager, and I hope that the next time we face you, Matt Patricia and the Patriots defense take you more seriously than I did.
Still a game manager.
I saw a pretty funny meme on the Chiefs subreddit, which I went to because I'm a masochist. That was just some really cool Photoshop of Alex Smith, and the caption was game, colon, managed.
The one I saw was him on the Madden cover, and it was called Goat Slayer Edition. So I appreciated that. I can appreciate and laugh at ourselves sometimes. Hopefully most of Patriots Nation can too, although they tend to prove otherwise, but I love you guys, even though I hate on you. It was frustrating. I mean, the Patriots should have been up 14-0, you know, 5-7 minutes in, and, you know, they failed to score. They had a touchdown overturned. The Chiefs marched down. It's a brand new ball game. The Patriots, you know, blew a couple opportunities in the first half, allowed the Chiefs to stay in it. Busted coverage, terrible tackling, and you can't do that against, you know, Tyreek Hill, who's a terrible person but a great football player. Kareem Hunt, who I massively underrated, and I said I wasn't worried about him, and I could not have been more wrong. My breakdown was the Patriots played about as poorly as they could have, and the Chiefs played great, and they outplayed the Patriots. I mean, there's no two ways about it. That being said, against the team that was number 2 in the conference last year, you know, we put up 27 in 3 quarters. We were leading in the fourth quarter against them. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's stuff to be fixed. Is this going to be a defense that gives up 30 points a week? I really don't think so. It's basic stuff. We're not going to face a team quite as fast as that moving forward. Now, it's going to be a great test this week, but I'm not pushing the panic button. I don't see how you can at this point.
I think our defense played like shit, unlike our offense, which I was being an apologist for. That said, much like with our offense, I do think it played badly in a way that can be fixed and that can be improved, and I don't think we lack the talent to succeed.
Right.
I can't say for certain we will make those adjustments, but I think it's possible. If you look at the personnel and the formations our defense came out with last night, it looked like we didn't expect Hunt, a rookie running back, to do anything, which of course he did. He broke the record for yards from scrimmage in a debut game, putting up more than 250, in addition to 3 touchdowns. But it looked like we didn't expect him to do anything, so we sold out to stop the pass. You know, making decisions like taking Roberts and Harris off the field most of the game while bringing a safety, Jordan Richards, in to play LB. And then we ended up stopping neither because of miscommunication issues in our secondary and a lack of aggressiveness. Smith was pretty much perfect on short passes. And it kind of reminded me of the Seahawks game last year where we played conservatively against the pass and then just gave up tons and tons and tons of short passes to running backs. When I saw, you know, recently acquired defensive end Cassius Marsh playing coverage against Hunt on that touchdown, it reminded me of Chris Long failing to play coverage against Procise when we lost to the Seahawks here last year. The last time we lost in Gillette, actually.
When you say Alex Smith was good in short range, like he was, I think the number was 21 for 21 under 10 yards.
He was perfect in short range.
I know he was perfect under, I think it was 10 yards, and it was way up there. It was pathetic.
I think it was 15.
Yeah, it might have been 15. You might be right, which is even worse. I mean, that shouldn't happen. And I know at the start of the game, it looked like we were going to give him the underneath stuff to avoid the big plays. We really didn't do either. Coverage was poor. Malcolm Butler screwed up like he did in the preseason. Stephon Gilmore screwed up. Devin McCourty, although he had great job tackling, he screwed up in coverage. A lot of people are calling that Tyreek Hill touchdown on him. I don't know what Jordan Richards is even doing out there. He had 47 snaps, which might be more than he's had so far as a Patriot. Cassius Marsh, I expected to be black, and he looks like he belongs in Creed. And he plays like he belongs in Creed. just all around terrible. I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. There wasn't really a lot of pressure. None of it. None of it was good.
I thought Flowers and Wise did an okay job generating pressure, especially Wise relative to expectations, but...
Yeah, the rest of our, I'll give you that.
The rest of our D-line didn't do a very good job, though, and you need more than two defensive ends in today's NFL.
Yeah.
Looking at the two 75-yard touchdowns, so on the Hunt touchdown, he was in Marsh's coverage, which he beat, because Cassius Marsh is not good in coverage. He's an edge rusher.
He's not good at anything.
And then once he beat that, you know, he just had to barrel through the secondary, which he did successfully because he's a good, powerful, fast running back. And it was just a stupid game plan.
Shout out to him, Kareem Hunt. Like I said, I already said I underestimated him. But to go from never fumbling in college to fumbling in your first NFL snap and, you know, just from there to be able to recover in the way he did, you know, it says over 250 all-purpose yards, three touchdowns. I think he has the most fantasy points of any player thus far this season. So, I mean, he might be that next Chiefs running back, right? We talked last week about the Priest Holmes and Larry Johnsons and the Jamal Charles. This may be the next guy. So he's going to be a fun story to watch the rest of the season.
Yeah, I really respect the way he bounced back from that fumble on his first snap as a pro.
Yeah.
Looking at the other big touchdown pass, so Tyreek Hill is barreling up the right. Gilmore doesn't seem to be fully committed to covering him. And then McCourty doesn't decide to start covering him until well after Gilmore has stopped doing so. And basically, by the time they're both going for the ball, he's already way behind them, and the touchdown is basically a sure thing at that point. So basically, it looks like McCourty thought they were playing cover four, and Gilmore thought they were playing cover two. So when he went to the upper right, they both thought he was in the other's coverage for a couple seconds, and then he broke free. So this looks to me like a Patriots team on offense, but especially on defense, that acquired a lot of new players this offseason and that has a lot of talent, but that hasn't necessarily integrated all of those new players into their system effectively. And the silver lining is that a communications issue like that is something that can be fixed, but it really sucks to see once meaningful football has started.
So then if I had to guess, it's some sort of they mixed up what side the cover six was on based on what we're talking about. Right? If one of them thought it was two and one thought it was four, then it must have been probably cover six.
Yeah, that makes sense. And,
you know, there's miscommunication. They'd point out the strong side. They didn't know which side was supposed to run it. I don't know. It's kind of hard to find out unless they tell you, and I don't really think the Patriots are going to tell you exactly what happened there. But even if it was, I mean, I don't know what Stephon Gilmore is doing. He was just standing there the whole time. I mean, if it's cover two on your side, then that means you still have man coverage somewhere, and he wasn't covering anybody.
Maybe he just thought it was going to be a curl or a cut inside or something, and he hesitated.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't hesitate like that against a player like Tyreek Hill. Yeah. I mean, you've got to know who you're playing as well. If I'm out there against a burner like him, I'm going to risk, you know, him getting the reception on the curl. I'm going to do the Logan Ryan thing.
I'd be more worried about him going deep than running the curl route. Absolutely.
Exactly. And we complained about Logan Ryan a lot last year, but that was a situation where you can see the value in him, in a not flashy but consistent guy like him. He wasn't perfect in coverage, short, but he did not let the big play happen, generally speaking.
He didn't Kyle Arrington it up.
Yeah, he would rather tackle the guy than get burned like that, like a Kyle Arrington or apparently like a Stephon Gilmore. And by the way, that looked eerily similar to that Chris Hogan touchdown in Buffalo last year, which I saw live.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's cool. Super cool story. Tell me more. No. Yeah, it was bad. You can polish a turd, but it's still a turd, right?
Well, doesn't Bill Gates have some kind of machine he invented in Africa that turns it into water? So hopefully Matt Patricia has one of those machines as well.
Who knows?
We talked about the fact that Flowers and Wise did a acceptable job generating pressure. They got Wise had a couple sacks, but one was basically given up for free because Smith slipped. The weakness, though, from our DEs that I saw, and it's the same one I saw in the first half against the Falcons, which is scary, is that they're not very good against the run. You need defensive ends that can play. Like, generally, you think of tackles as playing the run and ends as playing the pass, but they're all playing both, and it seems like the way to move the ball on us consistently is to run outside. So I don't know what the solution is, but we need to figure something out, whether it's schematically or making another trade that will make it so our front seven can stop outside runs, because they were killing us Thursday night and they were killing us in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the ends typically still have some sort of outside container on the run, which they didn't do a great job of. There wasn't a great job stopping the inside run. The ends, at least in pass pro or in pass plays, kind of generated some pressure. There were some sacks, but it goes back to what we talked about last week, which is there's not a lot of end depth. There's not really that pass rush guy. And it can be a problem. I mean, historically with the Patriots, the longer that the corners have to be in coverage, you know, the worse the result. So, it's scary, and I'm surprised we actually haven't heard any sort of Rob Ninkovich rumors at all.
Well, he's getting pretty old. I mean, he'd already gotten pretty old last year.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much that would help at this point.
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know.
Hopefully, I mean, Flowers is a third-year player and already our number one DE, but hopefully Wise can keep improving and get better in that area, and hopefully once Cassius Marsh has spent more time in the system, his performance will improve as well, and we can figure something out with what we have. And if we can't, then it might be time for another one of those midseason trades, and Deion Lewis is an option there.
He is, and teams are interested, and it's all about finding an edge rusher at this point. So there will be a move made before the trade deadline. Some sort of trade there always is, but someone will be coming in to help bolster that pass rush.
Do you have to give credit where it's due, though? One silver lining for the team on Thursday was the special teams. Ryan Allen and Steven Goskowski did a great job pinning the Chiefs back. Didn't help because our defense was a sieve, but still, it's good to see. And we saw some good plays by our gunners. And I saw Brandon King and that Bademosi guy that we got from the Lions pin the Chiefs deep a couple times, which I liked. And
Jonathan Jones made a couple good plays.
Yeah, what else is new?
And
Steven Goskowski was 2 for 2 and 3 for 3, making him perfect as a kicker. So good job, special teams. Too bad the rest of the team didn't live up to you.
A lot of people were worried about this. I know you were worried about this. They did a good job of keeping the ball away from Tyreek Hill. I don't even know how many times the Patriots punted. It might have only been once. They didn't punt often, but you know, they didn't let Tyreek Hill burn them in special teams. DeAnthony Thomas was the kick returner, but they did a good job of, you know, really just getting downfield and tackling him, even inside the 20. I mean, I know the touchback is the 25 now, but field position wasn't the problem. So that's definitely a bright spot. You also have to factor in that Matthew Slater didn't play. They didn't look lost without, you know, special teams guru Matthew Slater.
Or Nate Ebner.
Ebner didn't play either. But, you know, Bademosi coming in, filling in for, you know, I mean, Brandon Bolden's not there, so that's another one of those guys that is kind of strictly special teams. They did a good job. I mean, it looks like, you know, even in preseason, Goskowski's been fine so far. Hopefully last year is behind him. Bad seasons happen for a kicker. They just do. So it's not something I was ever worried about long term, because I think he's definitely one of the top five in the league in terms of, you know, just overall dependability. He's got a great leg. He's very accurate. So that's a good thing to take away, and it's something to be happy about. Don't think, oh, it's special teams, it doesn't matter, because it absolutely does. And the Patriots, more than anybody, you know, preach that. So.
Yeah, that was a silver lining, and I think we can bounce back from this loss to a Chiefs team that was the number two seed last year. The most disappointing thing for me, actually, over the last few days has been the reaction by fans and media to this loss. You know, whether that's the fans who are suddenly jumping off the bandwagon or acting like the season is already over, even though, as you mentioned earlier, the exact same thing happened, if not worse, 3 years ago, and we ended up winning the Super Bowl. And then you've got the Boston Globe blaming the loss on the pregame ceremonies and the Goodell towels and fans in our Patriots doing the same thing. And I think that's just silly. And if anything, is itself arrogant. You know, the towels don't matter. The ceremonies don't matter. Our arrogance don't matter. The Chiefs won that game because they're a good football team and they were the better team Thursday night. And that's all there is to it. So to get all, you know, symbolic and superstitious like that really misses the point, which is that we were not as good as them and we need to be better if we want to be a contender this season.
Yes. I mean, I thought you did a good job summing that up. So yes.
Awesome. I do such a good job, I don't even need a co-host.
That's right. I mean, I already said all that stuff. You just summed it up. So
do you know what I mean, though, when I say that blaming the arrogance is itself arrogant. Like, that is implying that the Patriots were destined to go 19-0 and were going to win every game for the rest of history and could only ever lose to a number two seed because of their hubris. It's like, no, this wasn't God's punishment for our hubris. We're confident, just like we should be. The Chiefs were confident, and they won. Who cares? The ceremony could have been 5 hours long, and it wouldn't have made the Chiefs any better.
It was short. It was underwhelming.
Yeah.
It was a really bad ceremony as far as ceremonies go. Maybe it's because we've had so many.
But it's just so arrogant to unveil your Super Bowl banner.
The players aren't even on the field for the ceremony. They're in the tunnel. Okay, so it's not that. The Chiefs were better. All right, and if you want to jump off this bandwagon, please, we don't want you. You give us a bad name. Okay, we'll see you back in December when the Patriots are 13-3. But go. We don't need the negativity, because how you're freaking out over one game, especially, you know, against a top competitor in the conference, does not make sense.
Dan Shaughnessy really didn't like the Operation Clowngate towels.
Of course he did, because he's Shank and he's a loser. Okay.
The sanctimoniousness is just mind-blowing, and he had a great line in his column, "Who's laughing now?" Well, first of all, we have won 2 Super Bowls since the Flategate started, so we're still laughing. Second of all, the Kansas City Chiefs are a terrible football team and we are definitely going to beat them towels. And that would have been a pretty crummy idea for a towel, because there's no way the TV would be able to make out the text, which would have to be really small to fit that on a towel. But really, like, there's nothing arrogant about the clown towels. Like, all these...
It wasn't a Patriots player thing.
I know. Yeah, first of all,
it was a fan thing.
It had nothing to do with the team. And second of all, as a fan thing, it had nothing to do with the Chiefs being bad or the fact we're going to win. Operation Clowngate had nothing to do with winning that game, and everything to do with the fact Goodell is a clown, which he still is. We could go 0-16 this year, and it wouldn't make him any less of an asshole or any less of a terrible commissioner.
I mean, if he's arguing that it's like karma for Patriots fans, I get that. I mean, you're absolutely stupid, but I mean, Shaughnessy is just, he used to be respectable, and now he's just nothing more than a knockoff Felger. He's terrible. There's a reason nobody reads his columns anymore, is because he just tries to be a contrarian and piss you off. He's not enjoyable. I've listened to him on many a podcast, on Section 10, on Kirk Minahan's podcast. He just comes off as just sour and arrogant, and like his main goal is to piss you off. So if he wants to take that, you know, that bandwagon route and say, well, you brought this upon yourselves, Patriots fans, and the ship is sinking, fine. Enjoy working in print media in the digital age.
The Globe has really declined since the Halcyon days of Michael Hawley.
Yeah. I mean, no print media is surviving right now. And well, we're just going to plug probably all our guests, because you got to plug Drive for Five. I want to plug Laces Out for our man, Jerry Thornton. If you haven't listened to Laces Out, Jerry talked about it, I think, an episode or two ago. It's a new Barstool NFL podcast. It's not just about the Patriots. It features Pat McAfee, former Colts punter, who is hilarious. AJ Hawk, who is also very entertaining. This isn't me trying to plug it for Jerry, because Jerry doesn't need it. It was really enjoyable to listen to intelligent conversation about football, about politics. They had a great, great Colin Kaepernick discussion where, they're all anti-kneeling during the anthem, but they actually, talk about the other side, which I really appreciate. So go ahead and check it out. It's funny, but it's also serious, and it's very, very intelligent.
Jerry is the most entertaining Patriots fan or media commenter in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, I probably agree with you.
And no disrespect to our other guests, but he is my favorite of all the guests that we've ever had.
Absolutely.
And I feel comfortable saying that.
Yeah. Beyond gracious with his time. He's been on, what, 3 times now? Maybe 4?
3, but it'll be 4 soon enough.
And it's been like over an hour each time, which, is really awesome. We've been lucky enough to have guys that I never really anticipated having as guests on this podcast. Famous WEEI names, longtime writers. We have guys coming up that I can't even believe we get to talk to. I'm very excited about. So we're going to have some awesome guests in addition to breaking down some Patriots football. It's finally the fun time of the year. So we're excited. Hopefully you're excited. The season's going to go up. It has to go up from here. Yeah, that's my spiel.
I do want to talk about Drive for Five, not so much because Price was a guest of ours, although that's part of it, but because he was nice enough to send me a review copy, which is pretty cool. That's a first for me. And I'm reading it right now. I'm not finished yet, but I am enjoying it a lot. It's not groundbreaking in the way that Patriot Reign was or that Darkness to Dynasty is, but it's got a ton of great information. And the 2016 season just had so much information and so much going on and so many cool stories and anecdotes that you forget so many or you missed some. So I do genuinely enjoy having them all in one place. And it also takes a little bit of a different tone than you might expect from Price or from a long-term journalist like him. It does go a little bit more in the direction of a casual fan tone, which I liked a lot and which makes it more relatable. And you'll like this, Ben. At the end, it has a list of his favorite Michael Bennett quotes from the season, or Martellus Bennett quotes.
Absolutely. I'm probably going to buy the book now just for that alone. Big Martellus Bennett fan.
I also feel like I should give a shout out, not to a sponsor, but to another organization that sent us free stuff. We're on our sort of our Patriots insider chat room. We're having a fantasy league. Ben isn't in it because he's too busy with his adult life, but they volunteered to send us a $100 NFL.com gift certificate as the prize for the fantasy league. So not really a sponsor because they're not giving me any money. It's for the fantasy league and I'm in no way obligated to give this shout out, but I thought that was cool of them. I don't really know what Monster Roster does, but it is some kind of fantasy related
probably thing. Daily fantasy, if I had to guess, right?
It's something that helps you with fantasy. I'm not sure how. Right now, they only do daily, but they're coming out with something else. So I haven't used it, but I can attest to the fact that they're pretty cool dudes. So if you want to check it out, visit monsterroster.com.
And it's not because I'm too busy with my adult life. That's part of it. I just don't really like fantasy football anymore.
Ben has to prove that he's superior to the nerds.
It's not even that. I don't care about your fantasy team. Okay, nobody does. So stop telling me about how Kareem Hunt got you 45 points. Nobody cares. They just don't. It's more than anything. It's the, I need the Steelers to beat the Chiefs, but I've also got Tyreek Hill. So I want Tyreek Hill to score like 3 touchdowns to root for the Steelers. I don't know. I care more about my personal fan interest than my fantasy interest, and that made me like suck at fantasy football, so I just dropped it. It was a waste of money and a waste of time for me.
I think Monster Roster is going to be sending me a letter after that.
But Daily Fantasy is great. Daily Fantasy is awesome. You know, DraftKings, and I don't even remember what the other one is. And if you're into that, I think there's a $1 billion challenge on DraftKings coming up. Definitely use Monster Roster because they're pretty awesome.
This is just proof that we're not corrupted by either money or gift cards.
Yes.
That I'm going to leave that in. All right, that's it for last week's news, but we will be interviewing Mark Daniels next and talking about Patriots at Saints on the other side. All right, it's time to interview Mark Daniels of the Providence Journal, who was nice enough to agree to come on, even though I'm late, and even though we got into a bit of a meme war last month on Twitter about being a real journalist and whether we may or may not be making him obsolete. So thank you so much for coming on, Mark.
Appreciate it, man. I'll meme you anytime, though. Love it.
Awesome. I just want to start off by saying that I did, in fact, end up getting a free review copy of Drive for 5.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Does that mean you're like a Big J journalist now? Does that count?
Yeah, I think it does. Club? I think I'm officially a real journalist. I think I just need to like send them the photo of the book and then they have to send me credentials and all that.
Yeah, seriously. Then you can get in the press box and rub shoulders with the Tommy Kearns of the world.
and enjoy all that free food you guys are bragging about.
That's right. Every Sunday, man. It's a buffet. It's delicious.
So the first thing I usually like to ask is how you became a sports journalist and what your backstory is like. And as one detail of that, were you a Patriots fan growing up?
Yeah, so I was born in Massachusetts. My mom's from Malden. My dad's from Cambridge. So yeah, I've lived in New England my entire life. I grew up in New Hampshire, but yeah, I was definitely a big Patriots fan. So when they won in, what was it, 2001, that was like, you know, the first championship that I really saw. I can still remember. I can remember where I was. I was with my buddies, TJ, Dave, and Chris on Wentworth Lane in Derry, New Hampshire. I remember just driving home that night, feeling ecstatic, you know, that I finally saw one of my teams win a championship and the Super Bowl, nonetheless, and a giant upset. It was awesome, and I was just so hooked. But I mean, my dad got me on football early, even when the Patriots were terrible. You know, in the early 90s, he would sit there and, you know, tell me to watch Ben Coates and Bruce Armstrongs, and I was a fan of like Marion Butts, a bunch of obscure guys who weren't very good. So, you know, I was interested in journalism early. I always enjoyed sports. I always enjoyed writing. It was a natural thing. So in high school, I joined the student paper there, and I continued that in college, majored in journalism at the University of New Hampshire. And really, my love for football grew there. My 4 years at UNH was Chip Kelly's last 4 years as the offensive coordinator there. So UNH's offense was phenomenal. Had a receiver there, David Ball. He broke Jerry Rice's college, like, records and stuff. And it was just a high-flying, you know, Chip Kelly typical offense before people knew who Chip Kelly was, and it was so much fun. So I covered that team for the student paper at UNH for 2 years, and when I graduated, that's all I wanted. I wanted to be a football writer. My goal was to cover the Patriots, but I know how rare those jobs are, so I'm like, I just want to cover an NFL team, maybe even a college team. But when I graduated, I got hired by the Boston Herald as an editorial assistant, and for those who don't know, basically, my job was to work in an office until 2 o'clock in the morning, including Fridays and Saturdays, and edit stats, edited box scores and leaders and standings that you guys see in the Herald, if anyone actually still reads the paper. And from there, you know, I worked my way up, and I started getting a little bit more opportunities to write. And what I actually broke in with at the Herald to get more opportunities was the UFC, because at the time, MMA was getting really popular. Didn't have too many writers who knew the sport or really wanted to write about the sport. And I jumped to it because I love the UFC. I still do. And I wrote about that. Like, I'd like go to like local events, basically not get paid and write about it just to show my bosses I could handle more. And that led me, so I got hired in 2007 at the Herald. And I wouldn't attend a Patriots game or a Patriots training camp until 2011. So it took me some time to work my way up the depth chart there, but I did it. And they kept sending me, and they kept sending me. And before I knew it, I was going to the Super Bowl that year when the Pats lost to the Giants. And, you know, from there, I'm like, oh, I'm hooked. You know, I love football. I love writing about football. I want to cover the Patriots. And I did that with the Herald. I worked with Ann Rappaport and Karen Grigian in there for a year. And then he left, and I worked with Jeff Howe and Karen for 2 years. And all those people, especially Karen and Jeff, just molded me, and they really mentored me and, you know, taught me, you know, how to do certain things down there, because covering the Patriots isn't easy. You know, they're not the most media-friendly team, and you have to navigate a certain way, and you have to sort of think outside the box to get people to try to read your stuff because there's so much competition. And after, you know, covering the Pats for the Herald for 3 years, a job opened up at the Providence Journal. I applied, and here I am, man. This is my fourth year full-time on the beat, so it's all I do. 24/7 Patriots, home and away games, I'm there. I'm in the locker room every time they allow us to be in the locker room, every practice, every day. It's fun. I'm you know, honestly, I'm living my dream. It's awesome. It's also wild to think that I'm in my early 30s, and I've already been to 3 Super Bowls as well. So that's a big plus when you cover this team.
Okay, first of all, it was Super Bowl 46 that hooked you with that stupid safety. We should have won that game. I'm still bitter about it.
Tell me about it, man. I was in an auxiliary press box in Lucas Oil Stadium, so I was basically in the crowd for the entire game, and it was just, yeah, that was just such a shot in the gut. Who would have thought that, too? Tom Brady starts the game off throwing a safety.
On an intentional grounding penalty in the end zone.
Right, you know, and then the Wes Welker drop, and I remember Giselle, you know, going off after the game. She was down there with all us. That was a wild night.
My husband cannot throw and catch the ball.
Yeah, unless you're Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I think Steve Young had one of those too. Secondly, I was under the impression that in order to be a New England sports journalist, you have to hate all Boston teams. I thought that was like a law here. Maybe the laws are different in Massachusetts than Rhode Island, but you look at the Boston Globe and what Shaughnessy put out a week ago, and a lot of the muckraking, as I call it, that you see here, attacking these highly, highly successful franchises. I like the positive tone. You seem to actually like these teams. Would you even still be able to identify as a fan, or do you have to leave that at the door when you become a journalist?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, since I left the Herald these past 4 years, I've been able to become a fan of the Celtics, the Bruins, and the Red Sox again. Like, when I was the Herald, I covered all sports, and I think some things people don't understand is you see behind the curtain, and it almost hurts in a sense. I remember my first time covering the Red Sox in 2008. First player I approached was Jason Veritek. I have a Jason Veritek jersey in my closet. The guy just starts yelling at me because he was having a bad day. Didn't want to be approached, didn't want to talk. I had no idea. You know, I don't know him. I just wanted an interview, and he starts screaming at me. And I'm like, wow. Like, this guy's kind of an a-hole. And I have his jersey back home, and I have his autograph back home, and I'm a huge Red Sox fan. And it's that type of thing that I think when you cover all four sports teams, you know who's a dick. You know who's nice. And it definitely alters your perception, though, because you see a guy having a good game, and don't get me wrong, as a journalist, someone does well and they're an a-hole, you still have to write that they do well because that's your job. But when they're a jerk to you, there's a part of you that's like, I don't know if I want to see this guy have success. Conversely, when a guy's awesome and he's a really nice guy, you want to see the world for him, whether it's in Boston or not. So when I was at the Herald, I covered all four sports, and it was difficult for me just to be a fan because I knew who was nice and who wasn't. But now, I have no idea who's a jerk on the Red Sox or the Celtics or the Bruins because I don't cover them. With the Patriots, I can't say I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan of certain guys down there. There are guys who I get along with so well because I've been around the team since 2011. So, like guys like Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon are two of the nicest people I've ever met. And whether they're on the Patriots or not, I'll always root for them individually. You know, I get along really well with Jimmy Garoppolo and Malcolm Butler and a lot of these guys down there. And I want to see him, you know, have good success. Like yesterday with DJ Foster, he gets claimed by the Cardinals. I'm like, great for him. He's a really nice guy. He's a really good kid. I hope he does well in Arizona. That's kind of where I am with the Patriots. You know, it's tough for me just to – I don't think I'd be able to do my job really well if I was a, you know, hardcore fan, just because if the Patriots play bad, I have to write that they play bad. You know, if Tom Brady – goes out and, like, last week completes 44% of his passes, I have to say, listen, Tom Brady didn't look good, and that's the truth of it, because that's why I have to stay in the middle. So that's where I stand on that stuff. As far as, like, columnists, like Shaughnessy, I'll tell you what, he does a great job with what his role is, because his role is to stir stuff up. He wants to elicit emotions from people. He wants to piss people off, and he gets people to click and read, and he's, you know, he's made a lot of money off doing that stuff. So, you know, it's definitely not the way I approach my job. And obviously, I'm not a columnist, but for guys like that, just, you know, the fact that he can piss you off, he's doing a good job.
That's one way to look at it. It's interesting the way you put that. It's almost like looking behind the curtain in a Wizard of Oz. Like, it almost ruins it for you.
Yeah. It really does, man. I have so many different stories about stuff. Even, like, I remember the Celtics, like, Rajon Rondo wasn't very nice to the media, and I think for now a lot of people know that Rajon Rondo is kind of a weird guy because he's been on a million different teams. But I can remember my friends wearing like Rondo jerseys, and I'm like, oh, you know, the guy is such a jerk. Like, I've seen too much to be a fan.
Well, fortunately, the Patriots don't have that problem. There's no one in this organization that is short with the media in any way.
Yeah, no. You know what's funny though about this team and last year's team is that they don't have many big time jerks on the actual roster. There have been times there have been guys who are, like, not nice at all. Like, I would say, like, Brian Stork. Brian Stork was
I was just about to ask you, was Brian Stork as much of an asshole as everyone else in the media says?
You know, honestly, the biggest asshole I've ever dealt with. And he's the type of guy that, like, we'd be interviewing, say, Nate Solder about, like, cancer, or, like, Ryan Wendell about being named a captain for the first time in his life. Brian Stork would walk by a group of media, turn to us, and just call us a bunch of fucking assholes and walk away. And we're like, what? Like, what did we do to you to, like, you to even talk to us like that? Like, that I've never experienced before. Just a guy just, you know, going on the attack. I mean, this guy would walk through the locker room and just make physical contact with reporters if you're in his way. And, like, he's a big guy. You know, you don't want any football player to try to check you. it's just strange. It was just, he had weird issues with the media. He was really terrible to deal with. You know, before him, like, Jermaine Cunningham wasn't a fun guy to deal with. He wasn't very nice. And, you know, I didn't cover Corey Dillon, but I heard him back in the day was, you know, was not very nice also. So I'm really grateful to say that most guys in the locker room today are really cool. You know, not all of them are great with the media. Not all of them like it, and I understand that. You don't want to have, like, 20 microphones stuck in their face and ask questions that they're not allowed to answer. But I would say right now, man, it's, you know, this group of people, they're pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's one thing to be short with the media because you don't like the attention, but it definitely sounds like Stork took that to a whole other level beyond just being short. And yeah, it kind of sounds like the way Twitter treats Doug Kide, except it's in person and he did it to all of you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I gotta give it to Doug though, man. He's very quick to come back and hit people back. He hits people back strong too. So does Jeff Howe. Him and Jeff, they have great retorts when you come at them.
He's hilarious. I get the popcorn out every time I see him tweet because I know there's some fireworks coming. And I've teased him about it before, and I think early on he got the impression that we were against him and that we were on the side of his detractors, but it wasn't like that. It's just we just find the whole spectacle entertaining. It's not about him being wrong. I think he's usually right when he gets into flame wars with people. I just find it funny how much more viscerally he reacts to these anonymous idiots than most checkmarked people do.
Hey, you know, I've always said too that Boston fans are insanely passionate about their sports. So, you know, you have to, I think in this job, you just have to expect that to a certain extent. Now, some people out there, they take it to an insane extreme. You know, you don't need to get violent and wish ill upon a person because you don't like their hot take. But hey, it's the internet.
Yeah, it's the internet. I know that better than anyone else as a Reddit moderator. But I'm going to turn the tables on you for a minute and put on my hardball journalist hat.
Cool.
How the hell did the Patriots media team lose to the Jags media team? What were you guys doing out there?
That's a great question. So get this. We set up a media game thinking it'll be like us journalists versus Jacksonville journalists, right?
All right.
Little do we know, Jacksonville trots out a team of PR guys. Now, they have this one guy. I'm trying to remember his name. I'll have to look him up. He's 6'5", played college basketball. He's like 25 years old. He got a stint in EuroLeague, all right? Like, that's not even fair. He's like their PR guy.
So
like,
they brought a ringer?
This dude scored a touchdown and dunked. He dunked through the uprights, and right away I'm like, oh, we're screwed. This, like, legit, this kid caught everything. And then at quarterback, he's throwing dimes. As a deep safety, he's picking off everything. It was so not fair. It's like you got a bunch of out-of-shape journalists going up against a kid who's 25, fresh off playing in the EuroLeague, played college basketball, which is 6'5", athletic, he can dunk. Not fair, man. Not at all. So, yeah, that's definitely how we lost. I'll say this. It's almost similar to how we lost to New Orleans last year. Granted, that was a really good game. But New Orleans had this kid who played in the Arena League as their quarterback. And he just ran all over the place. Like, it's not fair. And again, I think he's also a part of their media department. So, yeah, we've definitely been getting outclassed. We're 0-2 the past 2 years, but we're actually playing with media people for the most part.
Are you sure that wasn't just Jimmy Graham, that they didn't just sneak him on and have him pretend to be?
It might have been. Like, there was legitimately nobody on our team who would cover that guy. Like, we have some tall guys, like Henry McKenna is pretty tall. He's like 6'2", 6'3", but no, that wasn't going to happen.
So the Patriots don't use their PR guys during the media games? That's like, is that NCAA violation or something?
I guess so. And like, I love our PR guys, but I don't think they'd be able to help us like that much, you know? Like guys like Stacey and Aaron, they've been doing this forever, but, you know, they're dads and they have kids and they're not, you know, 25 and 6'5", and other guys like Mark Robbins and Michael Girovati, they're younger, but again, they're not 6'5" and former Arena League players. So, yeah, we're going to see what happens next year with joint practices. Maybe we can actually get some media personnel to play us.
Maybe that's the problem with the Jags as an organization. They're sending all their best football players to their PR department, and there's no one left to play on Sundays.
You know, I mean, you know, the guy who did play against us, he might actually be on the practice squad for all I know.
It sounds like the Jags have the biggest differential in talent between their media team and the real team, and the Patriots are the other way around.
100%. No, that is 100% accurate. We always joke about, like, if we played against, like, or if we had, like, one of the coaches, would we win? Like, if we had Nick Caserio, maybe we would have won because Nick Caserio can throw some dimes. But it would legit take us to have, like, we have to start recruiting. Maybe someone graduates from BC and they can come play for us next year.
I love that. I love that story. I want to make this into as much of a real thing as possible that people pay attention to. I suppose we should talk about the Patriots themselves for a little bit. As I'm sure you know, and as we've been talking about for a while, they lost their opening game to the Chiefs 42-27. Do you have any thoughts on what went wrong for the Patriots on Thursday and how you think they'll bounce back?
You know, no, I mean, I definitely think they'll bounce back because they have too much talent not to. What went wrong offensively was, one, Julian Edelman, the loss of him is an absolute killer. It's an absolute killer because he was probably, I would say, Tom Brady's favorite target. And you lose him, it puts more stress on someone like Danny Amendola. And, you know, the first three quarters we saw, you know, Amendola 6 catches, 100 yards, and the Patriots had an intermediate passing game and they could move the ball down the field. All of a sudden, Danny Amendola goes out because the Patriots had him return a punt, which I did not agree with since he's now been injured returning punts for 3 years in a row. So all of a sudden, you lose Danny Amendola and you lose any semblance of an intermediate passing game you have. Now, Chris Hogan can play in the slot and he can play over the middle. The problem, though, was he was being covered by Marcus Peters, and Peters just ate his lunch. They were doubling Brandon Cooks, and they had Eric Berry on Gronk, who absolutely shut Gronk down. So the offense was essentially chuck it. It was bad. You know, I think they have to go back to probably the basics and sort of figure out, all right, if we don't have Edelman, if we don't have Amendola, what are we doing here? Because you can't just throw deep to, you know, Philip Dorsett and Brandon Cooks and Gronk on every play. You need to get things going. And I think it also starts with the run game. You know, they need to get that going because if you don't have a run game, teams are just going to blitz Tom Brady. You're not going to have much time to throw, and you're not going to move the ball down the field. So that was offensively. Defensively, they were just an absolute mess. They couldn't stop short, quick passes. They gave up big gains. They have a lot of talent in their secondary. The problem with them is just up front right now. And if Dante Hightower can't play this weekend, that's a giant loss because you don't really have anyone to supplement them. You know, when they lose Rob Ninkovich and they sort of say, okay, we're going to move Dante Hightower to that left edge role. And he fits the mold in terms of what they want. The issue is you don't really have anyone else. You know, you have Cassius Marsh, who just came here. He was really a role player for the Seahawks. They have Harvey Longy, an undrafted free agent. He can do it, but he's been out with a concussion. It'll be interesting to see how they do against the Saints. You know, they need to create more pressure. They can't give up big plays. And really, they need guys like Malcolm Brown and Alan Branch to step up. Because I thought Trey Flowers played well, but he didn't get much help. You know, like the third down package with Dietrich Wise and Adam Butler, they all played well. That was one big plus. But you need Malcolm Brown to take a step up. He hasn't. I thought he took a step back last year. And Alan Branch, yeah, honestly, he looked a little out of shape to me, but he didn't participate in really OTAs or mini camp, and he missed most of training camp because he was out of shape. So it's sort of an issue right now. You need your best players to play like your best players. It's a tough matchup against the Saints just because on paper they have Drew Brees and they're good offense, but I don't think the Saints are very good. Their defense is pretty bad. So Tom Brady should definitely put up a 30 spot on them this weekend, and you know, hopefully the Patriots get back on track.
Yeah, I said on the other part of the podcast that the good news is we get to work our kinks out against the Saints' defense, but the bad news is our defense gets to figure out what it's doing with Drew Brees on the field. So I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I think we should all take the over.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a great test for the secondary, too, because, you know, Mike Thomas is a good receiver. And, you know, let's think about the Pats' schedule this year. They have a lot of good quarterbacks and a lot of good receivers on the schedule. It's not like last year, you know, where they faced a lot of backup quarterbacks and a lot of really bad offensive teams. It's kind of loaded. So that defense, they definitely need to fix those corrections soon.
Do you think we might see some further trades or signings to shore up the front seven or our receiving core?
Yeah, you know, I think it would make sense. Linebacker and defensive end is an issue for me personally. They just need more. You know, they need a veteran. Linebacker, you know, if you're playing Hightower on the edge, all of a sudden, Calvin Noy is probably your best linebacker. That's not great. You know, that's not great depth. They have quantity. I don't know how much quality they have there. So if they brought in a veteran linebacker, that could help. And same thing with just defensive end. You need help. You know, it can't just be Dietrich Wise, Trey Flowers, and Cassius Marsh. You need to get someone else in there. And, You know, the Pats, so they always find a way, though. You know, last year they traded for Van Noy. They basically got him for free. You know, past couple of years, it's been like, you know, these Jonathan Casillas and Akeem Ayers. And, you know, they've hit on those guys. You know, they've missed on some, like Barkevious Mingo. But I think they have a good eye for this sort of thing. And I would definitely expect a trade, you know, or even at punt returner, because I don't think you can afford to have Danny Amendola back there anymore. And if it's not him, it's either Chung or Chris Hogan. But you're so low on receivers, you don't want Hogan back there either. So, you know, maybe they trade for a punt returner or promote someone from the practice squad.
Roberts and Harris are, I think, pretty good against the run, but we need front seven defenders that can play the pass, whether it's in coverage or as pass rushers. I think that's the number one need on the team ahead of even wide receiver.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. You know, I like Roberts too. He's a good kid, and you know, Harris is a good guy, a veteran, but he's 33, and you're right. I mean, they're both kind of one-dimensional. You need some help, and I think that's kind of been an issue I've looked at for this team for the last few years, and it's definitely one now.
So are we going to trade Deion Lewis?
Oh, man. You know, I don't want him to. I think, one, he's your best kick returner, and two, I think when he's healthy, I think he's your best back, and I don't think the Patriots agree with me on that because I didn't play him. But I would rather have him run between the tackles in the middle of the field than James White or Rex Burkhead. I mean, the goal line, give it to Gillisley, but I think Lewis has that ability to turn nothing into something. You know, he'll turn that four-yard gain, you know, it'll take something that should be stuffed and turn it into a four-yard gain, is what I'm saying. And it would be interesting to me that, you know, they don't have Malcolm Mitchell at the moment. Julian Edelman's out. So you're kind of banged up with skill position players. Do you really want to lose another, even though you have a bunch of other backs? I guess what it comes down to for me is what they get back. You know, if someone's offering a veteran linebacker or defensive end, I'm thinking about it. If someone's offering a good draft pick, I'm thinking about it. But I don't think it's really ideal to trade a guy like that.
Yeah, it's hard because right now, just looking at our roster today, we have bigger needs elsewhere. But if another RB ends up getting hurt, that move could look really, really stupid in hindsight. So right. I just wish we were in a situation where we didn't need to make that move.
No, man, you're 100% right there. It's not a great sign that the team is being hit early, you know, with all these injuries. I guess if one thing you say, hey, maybe they get them all out of the way, right? I don't think it really works like that. But think of last year, and aside from Gronk, they really didn't get hit that hard. And all of a sudden, you know, they get hit early this summer when, you know, first Nink retires, and then you lose Derek Rivers. You cut Coney Ealy, so all of a sudden you're set at defensive end. And the wide receiver, it's Mitchell and Amendola. So, you know, things are starting to pile up in certain areas. But since it's only week two, they definitely do have room to correct these, I guess I don't want to say mistakes, but just correct these depth issues and see who's available.
Last question, semi-related to this, actually, in terms of personnel and training camp and everything. This user wanted to know if you have any insight into how the players are preparing for the next round of collective bargaining, because we know there's a lot of issues around discipline, player safety, scheduling, profit distribution, mm-hmm. and discipline especially. I mean, I think that's something Patriots fans are familiar with, and that is in the news right now with Ezekiel Elliott, so... I don't know if that is maybe a couple years off your radar, but do you have any, you know, even speculation on what might happen there? Because it's closer than people might think.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, some type of strike happened at that point. Cause it is a couple years away before it's off. I think it might be two. I'd have to go back and look. But the NFLPA is going to want to change the whole discipline process, because at the moment, Roger Goodell can essentially suspend anyone for any reason he wants. Just has to say, you know, oh, this doesn't look good for the NFL, and due to, what's it, Article 46, I can suspend you. Did it to Tom Brady, he's trying to do it to Ezekiel Elliott. They have, you know, have to change. I really wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, threatened to strike, and maybe did strike if that doesn't change. And for the NFL standpoint, I almost think, you know, to discipline people, there needs to be a better process, and maybe, like, some type of committee, you know, that gets together and sort of determines what's a fair punishment, just because it's not fair at the moment. You know, the Elliott thing is kind of crazy, that the NFL's lead investigator recommended no suspension, and then they suspend him six games. You know, it's crazy that you can compare ball pressure to steroids and get away with it. Like, that's insane to me. So from an NFL player standpoint, you know, I think you need to sort of threaten to stop playing, because the only way you're going to get owners and the NFL to listen is if you know, they lose money. That's it. This is all about it. The NFL is all about money. So you threaten to strike, you're going to cost these guys millions. And maybe you see change. So that's really what I would expect. It's definitely ways away, and I don't think it's on a lot of players' radar, but some players who are, you know, every team has reps for the NFLPA, and like with the Pats, I believe it's Matthew Slater, so I'm sure it's on his radar. You know, I know he's been a little critical, and sure, there's a lot of people behind the scenes who are very critical of what's been going on.
And often I think what helps the NFL is that a lot of these players don't have long careers. So maybe the long-term CBA isn't that important to them. And especially the financial issues tend to hurt more the players at the bottom and the players at the top. But
right. In
this case, because discipline is becoming such a big issue and the way he'll arbitrarily punish star players, maybe more so because they're star players, you know, for PR, for whatever reason, like you said, based on whatever Goodell feels like doing, I think that could make it so that it's more likely we get a strike or we get some kind of action because all of a sudden the players at the top are really invested in this as well in a way maybe they weren't in 2011.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. And let's be real. The owners are making so much money that they're going to be happy with Goodell because when he brings down the hammer on the Patriots or the Cowboys, there's still, you know, 31 other teams are saying, oh, it's not happening to me. And they're raking in the millions and, you know, money talks. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to see a strike because I love, you know, covering this game. But I think if you really want to make changes, you have to go to the extreme level.
So if you think most of the owners are happy with Goodell and that the players do have all those issues and are willing to do that, it sounds like you think this upcoming CBA is going to be a real bar fight and we could see some prolonged stoppages.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, I feel like it was only a few years ago, it was like 2013, 2012, when they didn't really have, OTAs in most minicamp because the players were striking. And that actually, you know, adversely affected a lot of young players because instead of practicing with their teams in, you know, April, May, and June, they didn't have that. So all of a sudden, these rookies are coming into the league in August, and it really hurt, you know, a lot of teams' developments for their younger players. So you only hope that people will remember that and how it affected some players to be, you know, kind of have that work stoppage for the spring, and it won't happen. But with everything that's gone on with Brady and Elliott and even some of the other dumb stuff, you know, there has to be so many changes, and it really starts with discipline. So, yeah, unless that changes, I definitely think it's going to be a bar fight.
I'd hate to see the season get delayed, or part of me would hate that, but part of me would also love how bad that would make Roger Goodell look.
It would be a terrible look for a commissioner who essentially, you know, owns the day of the week, and it's the fall is theirs, and it's football season, fantasy football, and to not have any of that, yeah, that would definitely hurt.
So let's all just pray that somehow Goodell gets fired to avoid the stoppage and we don't miss any games.
Right. Or maybe he just relents on the discipline thing. But hey, you know what they say about power? It's addictive. So he gets a taste of it and probably wants more.
All right, Mark, that's all we have in terms of questions. Do you have any plugs you want to make or is it pretty much just your Twitter account right now?
Yeah, just my Twitter account. You guys can check me out at MarkDanielsPJ. All my stuff's on the Providence Journal. And, yeah, I'm willing to interact and meme with anybody, so bring it on.
All right, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, I'm back with Ben.
What's up?
On Sunday, the Patriots will be flying to New Orleans to visit our Gate Bros, Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. And I've actually never really loved that designation.
Yeah, I'm on board. Do I appreciate the Saints, like, quote-unquote, defending the wall all the time and kind of being like that Twitter brother in arms? Yeah, do I like Saints fans? Yeah, except one told me I have a terrible choice in teams one time because we took Brandon Cooks and that was her favorite player. Do you remember that story? Yeah. But overall, I mean, I like the Saints. I think I picked them to win the division last week. They're not off to a good start. They just lost to the Vikings pretty handily. But I don't know. Let's not revel in this crap. I mean, we've had to deal with it for over 2 years. Like, let's just move on.
I don't like it a lot because, well, I don't have anything against the Saints or New Orleans, especially. I don't really think that's a good look for us because they actually did break the rules and do something pretty shitty. There's not really any ambiguity that Bounty Gate was real. Now, I don't know if Sean Payton should have been suspended for an entire season, and I don't know how much he knew, but that is a much worse thing than anything the Patriots have ever done, so I'm not sure I want us to be all buddy-buddy with them.
Right.
And then the fact that they signed Adrian Peterson this offseason, who I don't love, definitely lowered their stock in my eyes. So
we've had this conversation. I don't hate Adrian Peterson as much as you do. Now, what he did was probably shitty, but it doesn't bother him quite as much. But I don't know. I mean, New Orleans is a cool city. I'd love to go there, kind of just take it all in. They've got, you know, a World War II museum, which the history nerd in me wants to visit. I've never hated their team. I really haven't. No reason to. But yeah, the Gate Pro stuff is a little bit much.
Well, the good news for the Patriots going into this week is that our offense gets to work out its kinks against one of the worst defenses in the league, which made Sam Bradford look like Aaron Rodgers tonight. The bad news is that our defense, which apparently has even more kinks to work out, gets to face Drew Brees. Although the Vikings defense did a pretty good job shutting him down tonight, relatively.
Okay.
The Saints defense, for those who don't remember last season, were 29th in passer rating allowed. QBs that faced them averaged a 98.1 rating, which is about 10 points higher than average. And they were dead last in the league in points allowed per drive. So not the best defense in the league. They did acquire cornerback Marshawn Lattimore with the 11th overall pick last year. I don't know a ton about college football, but he played for Ohio State. And they did draft a lot of defensive players in general. So maybe they shored up their defense and it turned over in the offseason like the Giants defense did last offseason. But based on the Vikings game, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, this has really been the issue for the Saints since they won the Super Bowl, 7 years ago now? It's the reason they haven't gone farther than I think the NFC Championship since then. Maybe even the divisional round, I don't know. They just don't have a good defense. They haven't. It's very reminiscent of that, like, 2010 to 2013-ish Patriots. That, you know, just a great, great offense, but the defense got in a lot of rough spots for them and cost them at times. You know, I'm not in love with the Saints defense. I do appreciate that they drafted defensive. They're trying to address that. They obviously tried to get Malcolm Butler this offseason to really work on those needs that they have. Allowing 29 to the Vikings isn't a good sign. Now the Patriots are going to have to really work with their offense. I mean, they're limited. They're going to have to get Philip Dorsett into the mix as really the number three wide receiver. Dwayne Allen's going to have to do a better job catching the ball this week. We might see some, you know, Cody Hollister. I still don't know which one's which.
Jacob is the tight end.
Is Jacob the tight end? Okay. And I think Cody's back on the practice squad. So I guess if there's a defense to try and work out some of these kinks, this is the defense you'd want to do it against, them or the Jets or the Browns. So we'll see. I mean, and we go to the flip side. The Saints' offense against our defense is scary. Now, granted, they don't have some of the names that you might be used to. You know, it's not a Marcus Colston and a Jimmy Graham and a Brandon Cooks anymore. You know, it's Kobe Fleener, who, you know, is a pretty good tight end. You know, Thomas has been solid for them for a while. Outside of that, you know, Ted Ginn Jr. is new there. He's got some speed, which could be a problem.
He's kind of like Philip Dorsett, though, where he's a burner, but doesn't seem to do much.
Yeah, and in the backfield, it's Adrian Peterson, obviously, and Mark Ingram. So it's not as stacked as the Saints' offense has been in previous years. And just kind of looking at their roster and how they played against the Vikings tonight, I already don't feel good about picking them to win the division.
Who could have seen that coming? Yeah, the Vikings held them to 19 points tonight, which is impressive because this is an offense that in past seasons has averaged 30 plus. Going back to our side of the ball quickly, though, Brandon Cooks will be returning for the first time since that trade, which is pretty interesting. Could this be his, quote, breakout game?
I mean, you'd obviously like to see it. You never say no to a deep threat having a breakout game a la Randy Moss. You know, I don't know. I really don't. I'd imagine Lattimore is going to get most of the reps against him, maybe with some safety help, who knows. But the Patriots got to find something that works. 0-2 is not where you want to be. It's an obvious thing to say. I can't remember the last time Pedro started 0-2. I don't think it was that. Nah, maybe they haven't done it in a while. I don't remember.
I don't think we have while Belichick's been the coach.
It might have been just 2-2 is what I'm talking about. So
because I remember we
they definitely
started...
have been 0-2 since Belichick's been the coach, because they were when Tom Brady took over.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. So since 2002, we haven't.
Yeah,
because I remember when we lost to the Ravens in Game 3 in 2012. That was our second straight loss, and that brought us down to 1-2, and that was the first time we'd had a losing record in forever.
That's what it was. Right, because that season, what, they lost to the Cardinals in Week 2 on a missed field goal, and then we got them back last year for that. Yep. And then we beat, what, the Titans Week 1, I think? I remember that season.
Yes, and then we were... This is early, early in our Patriots days. In week 4, we played Buffalo on the road, and we were losing at halftime, and someone made a thread. Oh, well, guess we're 1-3 now. So, yeah. Of course, some things never change. And then we came roaring back in the second half and beat the Bills as usual. And that game gave birth to the fuck you bitches gif. And if you don't know what that is, just go check out r/fuckyoubitches and... Every submission to that subreddit is that gif of Brady saying fuck you bitches to the Buffalo crowd, but with a different caption.
I need to look this up, because I know the stats of teams that start out 0-2 making the playoffs are not very good. I don't know exactly where I'd find it, but it's...
I'm only 0-2, so it doesn't matter.
So it's 11 since the current playoff format have started 0-2 and made the playoffs, or have made it to the divisional round. 24 of... made the playoffs, 11 have made it past the wild card round. So it's not very good. You definitely hope the Patriots can go into a tough environment. On the bright side, they have 10 days of rest versus the Saints 6. I think that's going to be a huge, huge factor. Gives the Patriots a lot of time to work out some kinks, get healthy. Hopefully Danny Amendola can be back. Hopefully it's one of those quick concussions, quote unquote. Because I wouldn't try and minimize a concussion. Hopefully Dante Hightower can play. There's rumors that he might be able to. So the team could be fine, but, you know, it's scary. You don't want to start 0-2. I don't even know who week 3 is against. I think it's, what, the Texans?
Why are you talking so much about 0-2 teams? We're not going to go 0-2. Let's wait until that actually happens before we get too obsessed with whether we can climb out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a realistic problem for me, and it's the same thing as everyone thinking, oh, we're, you know, it's not a matter of if we go 16-0, it's like... How, you know, people are talking like that. You got to be aware of this stuff. I mean, it's going to be a tough game. It is. And I definitely wouldn't count out the Patriots losing anymore. I mean, who knows what they're going to be the rest of the year, but it wasn't a great start. And we can see if there's that hangover effect. Who knows? So don't be shocked if they go 0-2.
I'm not even going to dignify that. Danny Amendola is in concussion protocol, so hopefully he's back. You said Dorsett will probably be the number 3 receiver. I wouldn't say he probably will be. He might be. I hope he isn't, because Dola did a great job filling in for Jules until he had to leave the game. I talked about this being a breakout game for Cooks, but you could argue that Cooks already had his breakout game. I mean, he had 88 yards in week 1 against the Chiefs, which is a great defense, like I've said. I mean, that's on pace for more than a 1,000 yard season. That's good. 88 yards is nothing to write off.
Right.
I think he could have his, like, a real breakout game, like an offensive player of the week kind of game against the Saints, against that terrible secondary.
Certainly could, and it would be up to Tom Brady to be sure to hit him deep. Brady struggled a little bit with the deep ball. I mean, he did, you know, connect some, but definitely towards the end of the game, they weren't very accurate. So that'll be something to watch, is can Brandon Cooks, you know, quote unquote, take the top off the defense, and can Tom Brady hit him deep?
Well, it's easier to be accurate, especially to be accurate deep when players are getting separation and you're not as worried about the interception and you can sail the ball.
Sure.
So I do think there's a chance that Cooks is going to have a, you know, 125-plus yard game, partially just because he's a great receiver and this is a bad defense from all evidence we have up to this point, and partially because the Patriots seem to have a way to use players effectively against their former teams, whether that's Hogan in Buffalo or Blunt against the Steelers or whatever else. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a coincidence, maybe, or if it's some kind of attempt at a psychological effect, but we've had a lot of good games from players going against their former teams, and I don't think this is going to be an exception. And it could be added motivation for Cooks as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
On our side of the ball, I mean, Peterson didn't look great tonight, and they were limiting his snaps. It looks like they are afraid of how aging has affected him. It's not the best backfield in the world, in my opinion, to have to test our outside run defense against, and the Saints offensive line didn't seem to be doing a great job protecting the pass or the run. So I think the Saints will score. I mean, Drew Brees is still their quarterback. Michael Thomas is still a great receiver, but I think we'll do a better job than we did against Kansas City a week ago. And I think this will be hopefully an iron sharpens iron situation for our defense, where we play an elite quarterback and that gives our secondary an opportunity to work out its issues.
Yeah, I think we can adjust. You know, there's a lot of great, intelligent players in that secondary. Malcolm Butler has looked a little rough thus far in the preseason, the regular season. You hope Stephon Gilmore is one of those guys that can live up to his contract. You don't ever have to worry about Devin McCourty or Patrick Chung at safeties. Daron Harmon's been great. Shout out to him for being named captain. That seemed to come out of nowhere. But, you know, the Patriots obviously think highly of him. They gave him a great contract. So I think the secondary can work it out, and part of it is generating a pass rush and being able to communicate and not having those breakdowns. I mean, that's huge. If you have a communication breakdown, you know, in high school, you may be able to get by, but in the NFL, teams will exploit that. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is, if it's Drew Brees, if it's Alex Smith, you know, if it's whoever else, Tyrod Taylor, they will take advantage of that because they're in the NFL for a reason.
Not Scott Tolzien, though.
Probably not Scott Tolzien, though.
And you mentioned we have a lot of time to prepare. I think that's a great point. I think when you consider that our issues on the offense and the defense, especially in the secondary, seem to be largely schematic and communications related as opposed to talent related.
Right.
I think the 10 days off will give us a great opportunity to adjust and improve and game plan. And I don't think we're going to shut down the Saints, but I'm confident that we'll make some great strides and contain them to just get those couple of stops that we do need.
Yep.
Score prediction.
If you can't tell, I think it's probably going to be tight. I think the offense is going to struggle trying to figure out where they're going to go from here. And a lot of that's, you know, contingent upon if Danny Amendola can play. I think the defense is going to bounce back and bounce back in a huge way. So I'm thinking, looking at about 24-20 Patriots.
I think you're underestimating how high scoring a game this is going to be and underestimating our offense and how it's going to exploit that awful pass defense that they have. So I don't think this is going to be a blowout in our favor, but I think Brady is going to have his way with the Saints. And I'm going to go with a score prediction of about, well, their red zone defense is okay. So let's say 34-27. I think we'll put at least 30 points on them. So that's
right.
That's four touchdowns and two field goals. 34-27, but a more convincing win than that. That last Saints touchdown is going to come in the fourth quarter when the game's out of hand.
Right. Last couple of times these two teams have played, they've been decent games. You know, obviously that 2013 great comeback. Patriots blew a couple of late possessions and still managed to drive down. And we got the unicorn show pony needs where's the beef moment.
Brady's back.
Yeah.
Unicorns.
Before that.
Show ponies. Where's the beef?
And if you can remember before that, you know, 2009, a Monday night game, I think the Patriots were 9-2 and the Saints were 10-1, I want to say. It was very much hyped up. Potential Super Bowl preview. People forgot how bad the Patriots really were that year. But it was a good game, and the Patriots didn't come out on top, but it was a good one to watch. And I think, yeah, that would have been the year the Saints did end up winning the Super Bowl. So they have a recent history of playing good games.
Here's my analysis. Even though it's random, I can understand why Zolak said unicorns and show ponies. Like, something rare and exceptional happened.
Yeah.
Unicorns and show ponies are rare and exceptional. To this day, I don't have the slightest clue why he said where's the beef. I know that was in a Wendy's commercial in the 80s.
Yeah.
And was kind of like a pre-internet meme. But I don't understand what in the world or in that game made him think to say where's the beef. And I wonder if anyone's ever asked him.
It might be a good question to ask him on Twitter. You should go ahead and do it just as a lead up to the game. Get him
maybe,
on here.
Maybe we can get him on here. That'd be cool. Only we have the cutting edge journalism to think to ask questions like that.
I know. Maybe it's just he was saying you need the muscles and the meat and the beef to really grind out those tough moments. I don't know. It's a good question.
I'm liking all this discussion of muscles and meat and beef. And
the other thing with Zolak is he's probably not going to give you an actual answer on Twitter. It'll be sarcastic. So we'll never actually know.
All right, but I'm hyped. I'm hyped to see Brady have his way with that defense. I'm a little bit sad that Kembrell Tompkins won't be there, but I'm looking forward to a great game. Ben, any closing comments before I wrap things up?
I'm going to bed. That's my closing comment.
Thank you for taking the time out of your busy, busy schedule and spending some of your energy on this.
Pleasure as always. I love talking about the Patriots. I'm glad the season's back. I just wish it had started on a better note.
Hopefully the Patriots aren't as asleep as you are. That's it for this week's episode of the official Our Patriots podcast. Remember to leave your feedback in the sticky thread on Reddit. You can also follow us on Twitter at r/Patriots. Thanks for listening, and go Pats!